Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters engage today's top thinkers from around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas you can put to use in your personal and professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, Close Up Radio digs deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. Close Up Radio, where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Well, thank you so much. Hi, everybody. We welcome you back to Close Up Talk Radio. Nice to have you with us indeed. We're really excited because Dr. Edward Gosselin is going to be back with us today. He was a guest last week here on Close Up Talk Radio. He is a specialist in the field of emergency medicine. You know, these guys are something else. Doctors never know what they're going to be facing, when a patient walks in the door. However, if you're a specialist in back surgery, you know the patients who come to you are going to have problems with their backs. If you go see a dentist, you know it's a problem with your teeth. A brain surgeon deals with people who are having brain problems. But an emergency medicine specialist, a doctor in emergency medicine, really never does know what he's going to be walking into next when he goes into the room to see a patient. It could be somebody who's been an automobile accident victim. Somebody could have walked in with abdominal pain. Somebody could be having back problems. Somebody could be overdosed on drugs. They could face anything at any time. And that's why they have to be so doggone prepared. It's also why, believe it or not, you may not have heard this, so many emergency medical physicians have been named in medical malpractice lawsuits. Most of those lawsuits, by the way, are dismissed without prejudice, and during any part of the process, a case can be settled. But as has been said and been pointed out, when someone does file a lawsuit of that nature against an emergency facility or a hospital, the thing is, everybody is getting sued. The facility gets named, the provider gets named, the nurse gets named, the tech gets named, I'll get it, the radiologist gets named, the doctor gets named. It's because the lawyers out there are trying to throw everything up against the wall and see what's going to stick, if anything. Most of the time, it doesn't. But anyway, it's a delight to have Dr. Gosselin back again. Jim Masters had a great discussion with him last week about the field and what he does. One of the things that sets him apart, he is not just an emergency medical physician. He also is an expert witness in this field. He happens to be a board-certified emergency medical physician and the founder of EMG Consulting and Contracting, where he provides litigation support services and expert witness testimony for depositions and for trials. And that is why his service is so unique in what he is doing. He points out expert witness work is not the same as treating a gunshot victim, but it is still fulfilling to be able to help in a much different way. And to become an expert witness, you really do have to be an expert. Dr. Gosselin has spent some 30 years in emergency medicine. He continues to practice. And he points out that to be an expert witness, it's hard unless you are continuing to practice. He has seen some doctors attempt to do expert witness work after their residency, and although they may be board certified with a full complement of education, they not necessarily have the expertise yet to be an effective expert witness. Ultimately, says Dr. Gosselin, the job of an emergency medicine provider is first and foremost to determine whatever is wrong and if whatever is wrong could result in the loss of life. And therefore, physicians have to think just as broadly as possible to catch those things that may be serious or potentially life-ending. So we're going to bring Dr. Gosselin back, talk about a little bit about this business of being an emergency physician, emergency care physician, and also an expert witness, which is, that's a whole different ballgame, folks. You've seen witnesses on television being grilled by lawyers. That's not the kind of thing that doctors are normally trained for. I would be right about that, wouldn't I, Dr. Gosselin? This is not something you get trained for in medical school, how to be an expert witness, right?
Oh, absolutely not. You have to have a certain personality to be able to do that. Unfortunately, typically, a legal case goes through various steps. First of all, a client, whether it's a defense or plaintiff, meets with their lawyer. They feel whether there's a case or not. And then typically their legal counsel will get in touch with me as an emergency medicine specialist and, you know, talk with me, do you think there is a case here, whether for one side or the other? And most of the times I will talk to them 15 minutes, a half an hour. Sometimes I'm on the phone with them for an hour with the legal counsel going through without having reviewed a huge amount of the information first, to see if this is something that should proceed forward. And then typically they would give me, if they feel that's the case, they would give me all the information. I'd have to review all the documentation and everything. And then we'd have another conversation, this time with much more detailed information that I've been able to review and to see whether they need to proceed. And oftentimes the next step is something called an AOM, an Affidavit of Merit, where you file the case with the appropriate court. And after that, I would go through with the expert testimony, which begins as a written testimony. I review every part. I'm very fastidious. I literally review. Sometimes there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pages of documentation. I'll go through every single page and write a synopsis of what I feel has occurred and any of the issues with the case that may be of question or of interest. And then I'll put that in an expert testimony and send that to the lawyer. Then if they decide, like you said earlier, some of these cases will be decided out of court. Sometimes they'll just be dropped. Sometimes right. they'll be decided before they go they go further. If they do go further, the next step typically is a deposition where both sides, including the plaintiff and the defendant and any experts that are involved, would go and give testimony where both sides and legal representatives are there, and that becomes legally admissible evidence into a case. And the minority, but certainly a substantial amount of time, if it proceeds further and there is no settlement, then you would actually go to a court case. And that's more like the things you see on TV. But I will let you know that just like you see on TV, sometimes the legal counsels on one side or another, whether in a depot or in a courtroom, will really try to ruffle your feathers. And that's something you have to make sure you guard yourself against.
Have you experienced that many times, where the opposing attorney is grilling you, trying to throw you off? You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, I'll bring my mustard and my relish, and I'll be prepared to be grilled and serve myself up on a bun. No, I'm just kidding. You know, basically, you have to be professional. What you can't do is be overly emotional. You know, you really, you know, all of us are human, and you know, sometimes if somebody is questioning a you know, a medical or a legal issue that you have a strong belief in, you know, it would be easy to become upset. But that's the worst thing you can do is to get your feathers ruffled. You know, you go in there and you tell the truth as far as you are concerned and as far as you see it, and you try to give whatever scientific backing, which is from your expert, your experience. You know, for myself, I've had over 30 years of experience. Thank goodness about the average emergency medicine physician gets sued about once every 4 years. In my over 30 years, knock on wood, I have never had any case that was settled for any money or that wasn't just dismissed outright, and even that was just extremely few and far. You could count on one hand the times that I was named and then dismissed. And a lot of times what they do is they will name everybody. They will name you, your dog, you know, your your favorite nephew. Everybody gets named in a suit, but it doesn't mean that there's any malfeasance or malpractice with that particular individual entity, corporate entity, whatever it may be, and then that person or entity gets dismissed from the suit. and it may, you know, only be a, you know, a single entity at that point that that they either continue to sue or settle with.
You know, it's interesting the various kind of cases that you that people come to consult with you with, but are they always typically a malpractice case against a doctor or a hospital? Give me an idea of the broad range of cases that you're called to consult on or testify on.
I have a couple cases right now. Obviously, I can't speak on any active cases, but
in
the past.
Names.
Oh yeah,
no name.
Yeah.
Just example.
In the past, I've had there are certain things. If you're in a good residency program, and I used to teach my residents. At one point, I was a residency instructor. I had 11 physicians, interns, and residents per year over 3 years. So there were 33 emergency medicine residents that I would teach. And you do want to prepare them for the minefields. I mean, if you're in a war and, you know, you just go running out into an open field, especially if there's a little sign on it that says, hey, this is a minefield, you're kind of, you know, it's kind of silly without a map of where the mines are. And unfortunately, in medicine, there is some truth to that. There are certain things, certain scenarios that tend to lend themselves to malpractice claims. Not that they're necessarily something that, you know, is a winnable situation or not, but I'll give you a for instance. You know, at the top 10, retained foreign body, you know, is typical. You know, you have a laceration and, you know, there may be gravel or some sort of foreign body or something in there, which is left in there, and, you know, the patient develops an infection and that becomes an issue. Chest pain is one of the most glaring issues. You know, you have somebody who comes in with chest pain. They may or may not have risk factors. You know, we all know the risk factors, you know, age, obesity, prior atherosclerosis or cardiac episodes, hypercholesterolemia, you know, increased cholesterol, other risk factors that may put them at additional risk. And, you know, most of the time you're going to be doing blood work, troponin, which is a marker for heart damage, cardiac injury, X-ray, EKG, et cetera. And there are many, many protocols that say that not all of these people need to be admitted necessarily, but they need to have very close follow-up. So let's say, you know, somebody has two negative troponins, has a regularly normal EKG, and suddenly their chest pain is resolved. But if you didn't close the loop, and this is an issue in many suits, in other words, if you didn't call the specialist, call the cardiologist, call, you know, I've had cases where they didn't call the orthopedic surgeon, they didn't call somebody to say, hey, you know, I'm concerned about this person. Do you think you can fit them into your office schedule on, you know, let's say today's Monday? Can you fit them in on Wednesday? Okay, no problem. You know, so you've closed that loop. You've made sure that that individual has the appropriate follow-up and has the treatment that's appropriate. And that goes a long way to making sure that you're treating the patient appropriately. And that's really what it's all, what everything boils down to is, you know, I have a family model. It's called do the work. My kids know it. They're kind of probably sick of it. You know, it's like I have many people in my family who are either in the business or science profession. My mom was a nurse. My son's a nurse. My wife's a nurse. My brother's a nurse. My uncle was a doctor. And, you know, three of my father and two of my sisters were scientists, and as well as business people. So, you know, you can't come in and do kind of a halfway, half-baked job. You have to make sure you follow everything from A to Z, from 1 to 100. And,
right.
You know, put the work in that's necessary to
sure.
get the right result. And if you don't, you're going to be in trouble.
Well, it's pretty interesting hearing you talk about this. You know, it's interesting, your field. Like you, I come from a family with a lot of medical background. Both of my parents were doctors, and my brother's a doctor. My uncle's a dentist.
No.
My wife is a nurse.
Right.
You know, so it's all medicine. Everybody wondered, why didn't you go into medicine? Anyway, my question is this. I wanted to ask you about being an emergency medicine specialist and remaining in emergency medicine. What made you decide to do that? I mean, you could have done many other things, right? But you stuck with emergency medicine throughout your career? Is that right?
Yeah, the only thing I ever toyed with, to be honest with you, was we have an old hotel upstate New York in the middle of nowhere, very gorgeous, very, very bucolic. That's been in the family forever. And I thought, well, wouldn't it be nice to center console running the bar? And I really had no desire to to be a bartender. You know,
right.
Really, it wasn't my thing. Never was.
Right.
In fact, it's kind of what I fight against in emergency medicine is, you know, I'm often having people come in with substance abuse issues and, you know, alcoholism and drug abuse and things. And I just find it very, you know, I'm happy to take care of anybody who walks through the door. But it's very sad and a little bit frustrating that these issues have affected so many people. So I decided, that's not for me. I'd rather treat the people with the problem than be on the causing end of the problem with serving them alcohol. So my uncle was a physician. He was an ear, nose, throat physician. And this was a guy that was bigger than life. I mean, you know, he flew his own plane. He had his own motorcycle. He had, you know, sports cars. I mean, this guy was like, you know, if there was a James Bond who was a physician, it was probably my uncle, you know. So as a kid, I just always thought he was the coolest guy in the world. And unfortunately, he died when I was a teenager. You know, that really got me interested in emergency medicine. I would go over his house after school every day, and I'd clean up, and I'd, you know, clean test tubes and get ready for the next day. For his office and everything, clean the office, et cetera. And, you know, I always thought of medicine. Then when I went to medical school, I still wasn't totally sure what I wanted to do, but I knew I didn't want to do anything hyper-specific. I didn't want to be the guy who was a pulmonologist and all he did was go in every day and deal with COPD patients or
right.
a nephrologist. And, you know, he only ran, you know, essentially ran the dialysis unit or something. I think that would have really kind of been boring. I wanted to do a little bit of everything or a lot of everything. And my wife, who I'd met in college, was actually an emergency medicine nurse. And, of course, she'd tell me stories about, you know, we don't call it the emergency room anymore. It's more than just a single room. It's a department, so it's the ED, the emergency department. And she would tell me all these stories, and I just got like, oh, this is for me. You know, it's anything that walks through the door, anything, whether, you know, psych or surgery or trauma or medicine or peds or OBGYN or it didn't matter. You know, whatever walked through the door, you have to be prepared to treat and diagnose. And so, interestingly enough, I'm not the biggest fan of puzzles. I'll do them with my kids on Sunday morning, and they're like, Dad, you want to help me out with this? And I will. But every day is really a puzzle. It's, you know, it's kind of like the CSI thing, you know, at work. Because somebody walks in, and, you know, it's obvious if they've got, you know, a laceration or, you know, blood dripping somewhere that you're focusing on that particular area. But a lot of times they just come in, and you have to go through the history and the physical exam and the, you know, prior histories and past medical history and everything to put everything together and to figure out what's going on and then what you need to do for the person. So it's a lot of fun because, you know, it's although you may have seen the situation 100, 1,000, 10,000 times before, you know, it's really true that each patient is unique. Each patient has risk factors that are different than the next one. So, you know, you have to take all of that into account.
Well, I know it does sound really amazing. There's no question about that. Is that really one of the reasons why I would assume if any doctor is going to get a malpractice suit filed against them, the emergency room physician would be most likely because, you know, there's so many different things that could be thrown at him at any one time. It would be possible to miss something. Or am I wrong on that? What would you
No,
say?
You're very right. I mean, you know, the emergency medicine has a medicine aspect and it has a business aspect. And as
right.
the business aspect, it's actually considered a loss leader in most hospitals or facilities. In other words, we get the people that don't have insurance or might not be completely insured, and maybe they haven't been following up with their physician. Maybe they haven't seen a doc in, you know, 20 years, or maybe
right.
they're pregnant and coming in with contractions, and they've never even seen a physician, and, you know, they're hypertensive, and are they eclamptic or preeclamptic or whatever the case may be. So we're seeing sometimes people at their sickest and at sometimes for the first time for an issue. So the thing that, you know, I teach my residents, I think myself, is always think worst first. You know, always think worst first. Because somebody comes in, and I you know, explain it to my residents, you know, with a rash, you know, and it's a little eczema, it's a little seborrheic dermatitis, it's, you know, even this is like verruca, and it's a little wart on your hand or something like that. Well, you know, that's not going to kill you or cause what's known as morbidity and mortality. It's not going to kill you or cause permanent damage for the most part. But you really got to know those rashes that mean you are in serious illness or potentially dying. You know, if somebody comes in with, you know, multiple petechiae from fulminating Waterhouse-Friedreich syndrome, you know, from a gram-negative septic infection, you don't want to miss that, you know, because that,
right.
that's a person that could be dead in another hour or a couple hours if you don't
exactly.
take care of it, you know, completely
yeah.
and accurately. So you got to think worst first. You rule out the worst first. And that's where some patients sometimes don't really understand, oh, that doctor ordered so many tests. I don't know why he needed to do that. You know, and sometimes they'll have that discussion with me. You know, and I'm happy to have the discussion, but I also say, you know, well, you know, when you if you knew all the bad things that something could be, and what I'm really trying to do is make certain that these bad things aren't affecting you, and all it really comes down to is I care about your health. I don't want you, you know, to be inappropriately discharged or even admitted without getting appropriate treatment, because, you know, it's very small solace, you know, if you're upstairs and you have a very untoward episode, or you go home and you don't make it back again, you know, and that's my job, is to do my very best to try to make sure that you don't have those serious morbidities or mortalities. You know, if it's something tiny and small is not going to make much of a difference, then, you know, those things are not going to be life impacting.
Yeah, that's very well put. I want to point out you have an excellent website that gives information, or there is an information, you know, for you. If somebody's interested in contacting you regards, you know, expert testimony in a legal case, it's the SEEK website, SEEK under emergency medicine. Isn't that correct? And then your name, Dr. Edward M. Goslin, correct?
Yeah, it's SEEK is S-E-A-K, and I've actually it's a national group that
mm-hmm.
assists providers in the training that is necessary to be able to pursue a career in as an expert witness. And they have multiple witnesses, expert witnesses, you know, not just in medicine, you know, but they'll have some in corporate finances, things like that. So it's a good clearinghouse, and I have my website on SEEK, which is SEAK. And then if you go under SEEK and you go under emergency medicine, physician providers, emergency medicine, and you just look up my name, Edward M. Goslin, G-O-S-S-E-L-I-N, my website, and I actually have a website separate from that, but it's embedded in the SEEK. And I'll be honest with you, I'd prefer people to go through that because, you know, they
sure.
may want an emergency medicine physician that maybe is closer or whatever the case may be. And, you know, I'm happy to, you know, to give other, you know, counselors and legal representatives and lawyers, you know, the best site to be able to look for who they need to find.
You know, there's a question that occurs to me. You're based in Bridgewater, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
Do you the cases that you get involved in to provide testimony on, they could be from anywhere, right? I mean, it could be from California or Pittsburgh or, you know, Cincinnati, not necessarily all New Jersey. Wouldn't that be right? Or am I wrong?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, right now I live in New Jersey. I have five different state licenses because I work at something called a locums tenens, which essentially at this point in my career is a it's Latin for a place filler. What it means is, in fact, a lot of nurses are doing this too, where you are recruited to a different facility to work there, but you're not their employee. You're an independent contractor. And as emergency medicine expert witness, I'm also an independent contractor. You know, so I have, you know, licenses currently in New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, South Carolina, and Florida, but I'm actually currently working as an IC in Arizona, and I've been there for the past 2 years. So yeah, I get calls from all over the country.
All over the place.
Whoever would like to call.
I was going to mention that because I assume sometimes, you know, you're providing testimony in a court case that could eventually indicate that a doctor who is, I guess, on trial, or cases on trial at least, made a mistake, and he might, you know, he might be found guilty or liable. And that's a little bit – that's a little uneasy, isn't it, for one doctor to be testifying against another doctor in a situation. Do you understand what I'm talking about?
Absolutely. I would tell you right now that about 10% of the cases, 10 to 15%, I'd actually have to do the complete math on it, but of cases that I'm asked to review, I will turn down. Or I will say, you know, you may have a case here. I usually rate them on a scale of 1 to 100. You know, 1 is a case that you will never win. You just don't have a case here. And 100 is a slam dunk. You know, it's Michael Jordan coming in from the top of the key, and he's got his tongue out, and he's ready to slam this thing. You know, and unfortunately, most of them rank somewhere in the 40 to 60. You know, yeah, you've got a case. I think we could go somewhere with this, but, you know, you're going to have some difficulties. But if I've got something in the 1, 10, 15% area that I think you're just barking up the wrong tree, you know, like they say in the South, I'm visiting my sister in Charleston right now, you know, that dog don't hunt. And if that dog don't hunt, you know, I'm telling you that I don't want to go hunting with that dog. You know, it's like, and I will say, you know, I appreciate your business. I think you really would be better off, you know, searching elsewhere. I just had a case last week like that. You know, I just thought it was kind of frivolous. And really, you know, I'm trying to do right by the person. You know, I don't want them to be, you know, spending money on a lawyer and on expert testimony. If I can't believe in my heart that you have a case, then I don't really have any desire to take that particular case.
Exactly. I understand. But I assume you certainly find this a really unique aspect of what you do. This is certainly a little different from, you know, being in the emergency room. Here you're in a courtroom, and that's a unique challenge unto itself, correct? And somewhat different.
Oh, yeah. It's not good sometimes when I watch a movie, and there was one with Harrison Ford, and, you know, he played a police officer, and they had some expert medical witness who was a medical examiner come on there, and they're like, well, you know, well, doctor, what do you think about such and such? And he looked all befuddled, and I'm like, I can come up with three reasons that this is the case. You know, 1, 2, 3, my wife's like, I can't watch that movie with you anymore.
I know, it's me.
You know, and a lot of that is, it comes down
doctor,
to, you know.
Doctor, hate to interrupt you. We've run out of time for today, doctor. I want to get across again that the website to get to you is seek.com. Look under emergency medicine, and it's Dr. Edward M. Goslin. Doctor, really, thank you. It's great chatting with you. This is a fascinating subject, and obviously you have a fascinating career going for you, so it's great. Thanks for spending some time with us, okay? Very kind of you.
I appreciate it so much. It's been nice talking with you.
You're very welcome. Thank you, sir. And that'll do it, folks. We are out of time.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television, Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.
Yes, we do. I'm Doug Llewellyn. We'll see you next time, everybody. Till then, take care, be safe, bye for now.